right here. Now give me something loud, loud and proud. I know you got something more in there. Come on now, come on, show it.
Welcome to Wieners Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Lots to get to on the show today. Lots of UBC sports to get into. We've got interviews with head coaches from men's hockey and women's volleyball. We'll also be talking to Julio Caravata, a little BC Lions talk, Cam Wake, a Miami Dolphin, and of course we'll get into the Super Bowl, Vancouver Canucks, and I like tennis, and it's my show. So we will be talking about the Australian Open. That one's my call, and I'm going to go with it. With us on the line right now, you scared me for a bit there. You didn't answer the phone when I first called you.
My aunt just was actually using my phone, and then she was running upstairs when the phone call. I just missed it. You know, I'd call you back, so.
I was a little frightened, but okay. You did call me back immediately. Chris Dick from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Chris, let's get into this. Your team right now, you do actually, Chris, currently leads UBC with a scoring average of 14.3 points per game. Chris, your team currently 15-2 on the season, coming off a sweep on the weekend of, well, one's your former hometown, the other's your former team. You beat Winnipeg 98-58 on Friday, your hometown. And another one, Chris, your former team. The right. Manitoba Bisons, you beat them 91-64 on Saturday. Although, Chris, you guys were tied with them 42-all at halftime. So a rough first half, but then you blew them out in the second half.
Right. Yeah, no, the first game we kind of had control right from the beginning. In the second game, I think Manitoba has a little bit more talent on their team, and they actually have some guys who can play. We were a little worried about their three-point shooting because the night before, they only lost to UVic by 4 points, where I think they hit 14 or 15 threes. So we were really extended out far, and they ended up scoring in the paint more than we kind of thought. And kind of in the second half, we just realized we're worrying too much about their three-point shooting, so we just kind of went back to just our philosophy on defense, and it worked out really well. I think we only gave up, 20-some points in the second half, so that was the difference in the game.
Thoughts for you, Chris. You know, UBC obviously a very successful team since you joined them 2 years ago. And then you look at the Manitoba Bisons, the team you left, struggling right now. I think they're fighting for a playoff spot in their division as we speak. Your thoughts, seeing where your old team is sitting and the fact that UBC is doing so well right now?
You know, I always think back on, I guess, my time there and stuff. And if I see one positive from it is I got the opportunity to play right away there, which allowed me to, our team didn't always succeed, but individually I was able to succeed, which allowed me to get onto the team that I'm on right now, because not everyone gets to play for UBC. So I consider myself lucky in that I got to play a lot of minutes my first 2 years and got to, put up some numbers and stuff, which... so I could entice Kevin to take me on his team. So, I'm always happy. I mean, I've been on both ends. You know, a lot of the guys on our team are just kind of used to winning all the time, and whereas I've been on both ends, and I really appreciate what it means to be, 15-2 or winning Canada West 2 years in a row, and And I know Nationals have been a disappointment, but even just, you know, a lot of, most teams don't ever even get to be there. A lot of players go through their 5 years not ever making the national championship. So to me, that's a big thing for me. And I know this year, hopefully we do better when we do get there. But the success that we've had here, I've been very happy with.
How's your health doing right now, Chris? You've battled the back injury, sounds like almost your whole career from what I've been told, but it did act up a lot, or it has acted up on you a lot this year. And then right after the Christmas break, you suffer a Charlie horse in the games in Kamloops versus Thompson Rivers. You got 27 points in the two games, 13.5 points per game on the weekend. How's Chris Dick feeling right now?
I would say probably for the whole season, other than maybe like right at the beginning of preseason, I think this is probably the best that I've felt. Yeah, the back is something that I've had to deal with since before high school, and it just seemed to act up quite a bit in the first semester, and it's something I still have to kind of be aware of, so I don't, you know, overdo it too much and aggravate it too much. But lately it's been pretty good, and then I was starting to feel good, and then, yeah, I got that big Charlie horse. You know, I guess that's what happens when you try and take it against a 7'2" guy. So but no, that's better now as well. And so I think overall I'm probably feeling the best that I have all season, which is good, because regular season is running down and playoffs are coming up soon, so that's when you want to feel the best. So
yeah, how do you approach it as a player with the injuries, Chris, is, or with the back? How do you treat this? Do you just ride it out? I mean, you have 6 games left. You're facing all teams with sub 500 record except for Calgary, who will be here next Saturday. And then the playoffs start, you know, round one, round two, Canada West final. You're at home all the way through if you keep on winning until if and when you do go to Nationals in Ottawa. So besides going to Abbotsford this weekend, you don't have to travel again if you guys can keep winning. So how do you approach it as a player? Are you just gung-hoing it the rest of the way, or are you taking it easy till playoffs? How are you approaching it?
No, I'm definitely not taking it easy before playoffs. The thing is, I mean, for me, there's been certain aspects of my game that I think I've been improving on and doing well. I think offensively, I've struggled this year. You can look at a lot of different numbers. I mean, I would say my points are down, which is completely fine, and I think that's a lot due to just the depth on our team. I mean, I think I did an interview with a Winnipeg paper, and she had said that we don't have anyone on our team in the top like 40 in all CIS. So that just is our depth, you know. But in terms of like percentages and stuff, I'm not shooting the ball so good. So I mean, I've talked to Kevin, and he kind of wants to, you know, try and get me back into the flow that I usually am in. So I have to try and kind of work my way out of that. But we are playing some teams with sub 500 records, but I mean, it's important for us that we don't just, you know, play against Fraser Valley and Thompson Rivers and stuff like that, but we use those games to really get better instead of just kind of playing at their level.
Yeah, tell us about the Fraser Valley matchups this weekend. You guys are traveling to Abbotsford. Fraser Valley 7-10 on the year. Not a terrible record for them. And you haven't played them one time this year, and 3 of your last 6 games are going to be against Fraser Valley, so you're going to get used to them in the next 3 weeks. What's the matchup, UBC-Fraser Valley?
Right. I mean, you look at their record, and it is pretty solid. I guess not taking anything away from them, because they obviously won the games that they needed to win. But I guess one asterisk I would put on that is I don't think they played. I know they didn't play us first semester. I don't think they played UVic either. So we'll see kind of, I guess, how they finish up at the end of the season. But I think they had a little bit of an easier schedule starting off. That being said, we're never going to take them lightly. They're very similar to the last two teams that we played in Winnipeg, Manitoba, in that they, you know, they have one big guy, and then they kind of have 3 guards, and then a fourth who's kind of a guard slash forward kind of. And so they do, it's just a lot of dribble penetration and passing and kicking, and they rely on their 3-point shot a lot. So it'll be very similar to what we did this last weekend. So we just got to make sure that we contain dribble penetration, so not letting guys just drive past us and then kicking and for wide open threes. Just more containing our guys, so we don't need to help off their shooters and stuff like that. So I think that'll be one of the big keys for us. But I think we also they have a lot of young guys as well, so we need to use our experience to get past them as well, because I think they have three or four rookies that get quite a bit of minutes, and we're a little bit more of a veteran team, so we need to make sure we take advantage of that as well.
And on a personal level, Chris, one thing you are doing very well offensively, and just tell us, because this is sort of one thing I can never understand, how a competitive basketball player, especially a guy in the NBA, isn't very good at it. You are shooting 84% from the free throw line this year. You lead your team. You're fourth in the conference. Do you work on it all the time? What makes a good free throw shooter?
It's tough. I mean, yeah, you got to work on it, but so much of it is just your... I guess your focus and your mental, I don't know, just preparing for it. A lot of guys, they're, you know, the good free throw shooters in practice, but for some reason when it, you know, when they're in a game, it's just, it's a mental block type thing. So I think for me, I practice it, and then you just got to be confident in what you can do and just go out there and do it. And that's how I've always kind of felt about it. Just keep the same routine and just go up there and knock it down. So.
I mean, are you amazed when you see a guy like Shaquille O'Neal below 50%? I mean, is that just...
Yeah, I mean, people always say his hands are so big and this and that, but I just feel like if you had enough reps, that there's no reason why, and that's your, like, that's your job. Like,
yeah.
They don't have school, they don't have anything else. They basically, their whole day is devoted to, you know, taking care of their bodies, working on their game. So it does shock me a little bit. And I mean, a lot of times, like when you're younger, you play with these little mini basketballs and stuff, and your hands are getting bigger, and you still play with them. And eventually you get used to it, and you shoot it okay. So that does surprise me. I would think that he would have gotten a bit better. Maybe when he was younger, he just didn't care as much because he was so dominant.
Yeah.
But
he didn't need to, did he? You
know? Yeah, exactly.
Chris Dick, UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Well, Chris, going to Fraser Valley this weekend. And, of course, the big matchup, for me at least, following this team, next Saturday, you're 15-2 in the conference. Calgary's 14-2 going
right
into their weekend's game. So that'll be a fun one next Saturday. A team you beat in the Canada West Final Four semifinal game last year, and
right,
that was such a big game because the winner of that went to Nationals. You haven't played them since, so that'll be a great game next Saturday.
Yeah, are you you're going to be there at that game?
I will be. I was sick this weekend, Chris.
Okay. I'll let that slide because we missed you, and I know my parents and my girlfriend back home, they all missed you on the radio as well, so I'll let them know that you're feeling better.
I'm feeling better. I'm still a little off today, but I'm doing the show. But the other one is, if it was playoffs, I would have done it. You know,
If it's playoff time, you got to just suck it up and do it, right?
Yeah, I would have just done it. But you know, you're the athlete. It's not even close. I'm barely in shape to do sports broadcasting, Chris. But you
so,
know, I
so gotta, you. Does that mean you're coasting through the regular season just waiting for the playoffs or what?
I'm not answering that. I'm not answering that. You got me there, Chris. Well done. Well done. And I will be ready for the Calgary game next Saturday. How's that?
Good stuff.
There you go. Chris Dick. Chris, thanks a bundle. And best of luck in Abbotsford this weekend.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right, it was Chris Dick from the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team. Always fun to talk to Chris. Yeah, he's doing very well for UBC this year. 14.3 points per game is their leading scorer. Shooting is down this year, but, you know, I think Chris's point total would be up. It's just UBC has so much depth that, you know, he's just getting less shots, less minutes this year. However, even if he was getting all the minutes, he probably wouldn't be scoring like years past because his shooting numbers are down this year. The UBC Thunderbird women's basketball team also have some big games coming up this weekend. They currently sit fourth in the Canada West Pacific Division, pretty solidified for that fourth and final playoff spot. With six games to go, they trail Trinity Western by two games for third place, and third is a big deal. This is with six games to go. They trail Trinity by two. UBC has two games in hand. Because if UBC finishes fourth for round one of the playoffs, winner advances, loser goes home, they will take on the SFU Clan. SFU is 16-1 on the season. If they finish third, they travel to Victoria. UVic is 11-6 on the season. So that pretty much sums it up right there. UBC this weekend will be playing the 4-13 Fraser Valley Cascades. Trinity Western, if you want to keep track of that, they will travel to 7-9 Calgary and 3-13 Lethbridge. So should be kind of tough for UBC to make up ground on the weekend. However, UBC does have the favorable schedule over SFU, over Trinity Western, I'm sorry, the rest of the way. All right, everybody, we are going to take a quick break. When we're back, I'm going to go over some volleyball and men's hockey with UBC Sports, and that'll round up our UBC Sports coverage. I've got some interviews with UBC Thunderbird men's hockey coach Milan Dragicevic and the women's volleyball coach Doug Reimer. And if you stay with us till about 5:10, I will have Julio Caravata of the BC Lions Radio Network talk a little football, talk a little Lions offseason up to this point. Cam Wake, great defensive end for BC, just recently signed with the Miami Dolphins. And, of course, BJ Bass, he's been with me all season long talking football. Well, of course, we'll talk about it the week after the AFC and NFC championship games. We'll also touch on some Vancouver Canucks. And I will be talking a little Australian Open men's and women's tennis because that's just what I do. Anyways, folks, you're listening to 101.9 FM. We'll be right back with an interview with Doug Reimer, head coach UBC Thunderbird women's basketball, and then Milan Dragicevic, head coach UBC Thunderbird men's hockey.
How long do you think it'll be before I can do the show?
You're starting tonight.
We'll do it live!
If you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about rock and roll music that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat, the beat, the beat.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway is Vancouver's newest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres.
But a lot of these groups are nothing but pure carnality and fleshly and so forth. But
check out BiltmoreCabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
You're pretty happy with the way you look and the attitude you've got, are you?
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Earlier on in the day, I caught up with the head coach of the UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team, Doug Reimer, currently sitting number 7th in the country. They are the defending CIS national champions, and they're coming off of a sweep on the road at Saskatchewan last weekend. So here's my interview with the head coach, UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball, Doug Reimer. Here I am with the head coach of the UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team, Doug Reimer, and Coach, big weekend coming up for you guys. You're going to be hosting the number 4 team, tied for number 4 team in the country, the Manitoba Bisons. You currently sit at number 7 in the country, but it is a dogfight for playoff positioning in the Canada West Conference right now. You currently sit 5th in the conference. You're 2 points out of 4th. 4th place hosts a first-round playoff series. So, Coach, how important is this weekend for you guys?
Well, I think you set it up really well. It will be, if not the biggest, one of the biggest of the season for us. You know, maybe our biggest home weekend.
So tell us about this Manitoba team. They're a very good team, and what do you guys have to do this weekend?
Yeah, they're well skilled, and they have a lot of weapons, and in some ways they're similar to us in that regard. So we have to, what we call in volleyball, get them out of system, which means basic things like serving very well and on our side of the court passing well, because if you serve the ball real easy and let them run stuff, they have and this is the women's team, keep in mind, a 6'4" setter who can do a lot of things above the level of the net. And they've got a couple other players play with the national team program as well that are pretty darn solid.
On your side of the ball, Coach, let me just ask you about this stat here. You lead the conference in blocks at 2.8 blocks per game, more than half a block more than your next closest competitor there. You got a senior on team, Marissa Field. She leads the conference in blocks. Is this something your team's very good at? Is that a statistical anomaly right there?
I don't think it's no, it's not. It is something we take a little bit of pride in and been pretty good at it, and that kind of anchors our overall defense because in addition, I don't know where it sits in the last week or two, but we were also leading in holding the other team's offense overall to like a low level of efficiency, and so that's something that will be definitely tested with a very good Manitoba team. So I like to say you can psychologically earn more than 1 point with a block because you kind of get in the heads of the opposing hitters.
Big intimidation ploy then.
You
right?
Got it.
And the status of maybe your star player on your team, definitely one of your top players, Liz Cordonier. She's missed some games. How's she doing?
She's doing great. Her ankle's not so good, though. she probably won't play this weekend at all. So that ups the ante for everybody else, you know, and she's been out since early December, so it's been a little frustrating for her. And, there's no doubt we could use her in our lineup this weekend playing Manitoba. But the key thing is, like you said up at the beginning, we need a split or two wins to give the chance of hosting the playoffs a better, you know, a more than mathematical chances, and so that when she is healthy, that we're going to scare people regardless. But I think you add a healthy Liz Cordonnier back to her lineup, and if we're playing at home, then that's a matchup I wouldn't want to coach against.
Six games left in the season, Coach. You go to Winnipeg next weekend. They're 1-13. Then you finish at home versus Brandon. You're in fifth. Brandon's in fourth, but who knows what the standings are going to be. They're so tight. Who knows what they're going to be in 3 weeks. I mean, if you can pull off, say, the one, maybe two wins this weekend, that's what you're hoping for. Next weekend going into Winnipeg, Winnipeg's 1-13, so if you can pull off, say, two wins this weekend, just from looking at the standings, you can finish almost as high as second place.
That's right. Absolutely. Just to give you an idea of the parity of the league and in the country, teams have bopped around in the top 10 from like 7th up to 2nd in the space of 2 weeks. So the first place team in the conference, Alberta, was beaten twice last weekend by Trinity. And with some wins, as you mentioned, we can get up there. And it's rare has it been in women's volleyball that I think the first place team right now has three losses with still significantly tough matches ahead of them. So any one of seven teams, you know, can go and sweep anybody else on a weekend.
Coach, thanks so much for doing this. We will be broadcasting the game on Friday night, UBC hosting
good
the stuff. Manitoba Bison. So best
should
of luck.
Good crowd and should be good.
Great. Thanks a lot, Coach, for doing this. Best of luck this weekend.
Thanks to you guys.
Okay, that was Doug Reimer, head coach of UBC Thunderbird women's volleyball team. Once again, the game starting on Friday at 6 o'clock will be broadcast on 101.9 FM CATR, followed right after that by the UBC Thunderbird men's volleyball game. UBC Thunderbird men's volleyball 6 in the conference right now. They will be hosting the 4-10 Manitoba Bisons. They're 6 in the conference, only 7 make the playoffs. UBC is hoping to sweep on the weekend and maybe find themselves in a host playoff position. On to hockey here for UBC Thunderbird Athletics. The UBC Thunderbird women's hockey team, currently tied for third with Saskatchewan, they travel to Regina this weekend. Four teams make the playoffs. UBC currently leads Regina by 6 points for the last playoff spot. UBC 7-10-1, Regina 4-13-1. And UBC Thunderbird men's hockey, well, things not going great for those guys right now. They are currently 7th in the Canada West with only 12 points in 18 games. 6 teams make the playoffs, so they're out of a playoff spot right now, but they only trail Calgary and Regina by 1 and 2 points respectively for 5th and 6th in the conference. As the UBC hockey team, they are struggling this year scoring goals, and they had a rough weekend last weekend. They got swept by the number one team in the country, the Alberta Golden Bears, 2-0. And in those games, UBC got outscored 11-1. I caught up earlier today with the head coach of the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team, Milan Dragasevic. Start off, though, Coach, on the weekend, going into Alberta, taking on the number one team in the country and getting swept on the weekend, outscored 11-1 in the process. Coach, what happened on the weekend?
Well, what happened was we couldn't score. We were down early, especially on Friday night. We were down 3-4-0 before we even knew what happened. We took a 5-minute major from behind, and they managed to score a couple of power play goals early. And same thing on Saturday. We were down 1-0, and we were pressing. And the shots, we were out shooting them 13-11 at one point, but we could not score. And then 2-0, and then we're pressing some more. Got to get our defense to activate, and they capitalize on some line rushes. And when we have a hard time scoring, it just seems that we're not putting the opposition on their heels, and they can just play a simple game, and we have to take some chances to score and gamble a little bit, and that's what happened.
Yeah, Coach, goal scoring has been a problem for you guys this year. 32 goals in 18 games. That's less than 2 goals a game. How do you fix that? Because, Coach, I hate to say it, that's not going to get it done, is it?
Well, no. If you score under 2 goals a game, obviously it's not going to get it done. And it's something that we're working on and putting the pucks on the net and going to net with traffic. And, you know, that's been the theme of our practices. But it just seems that, you know, for instance, in Alberta, you know, we had no puck luck. You know, we hit the goalpost a couple times and no second chances. And we have to generate some offense on our power play, and we need some puck luck for us to be successful.
This weekend series, Coach, a winnable matchup definitely for you guys. You're taking on the Manitoba Bisons this weekend. You played Manitoba twice earlier this season, both games here at UBC at the end of October, and you won both of those meetings. So this is a game. These are games you can definitely win. Tell us about the matchup versus Manitoba.
Well, they're playing very well right now. They've won their last 3 out of 4, and 3 in a row they've won, and they're in third place right now. They're a good team. They play in the Olympic size rink, and you know, I guess the one advantage that we do have is that we've swept them here in you know, a couple months ago, and our guys are confident. You know, we're getting some guys back from injuries, and our guys understand the desperation that we need to play, and it doesn't matter if it's on the road or at home, and that's the biggest thing is, you know, we just need something to go our way early in the game for us to have some confidence.
Yeah, Coach, Calgary, you trade Calgary by 1 point for the last playoff spot. You trail Regina by 2 points for the second to last playoff spot. You have 2 games in hand on Regina. You've got 10 games to go. They have 8. But Calgary and Regina play each other this weekend. So if you can come up with some wins in Manitoba, you will shoot up the standings.
Well, you know, the big thing is we just don't want Calgary and Regina to tie any games, and that way each team will get, you know, 3 points or a 2 point and a point for the loser. So, you know, the bottom line is we still control our own destiny, and then that's what we want, and every team wants to be able to control what they have in front of you. We can't rely on other teams to win or lose games for us. We just have to be able to look at ourselves and make sure that we get better.
Positive offensively, Coach, can you single out this player, Jeff Lynch, 13 points in 18 games, does lead you guys in scoring. He's the only player on your team with 4 or more goals. He has 5. How's Jeff Lynch playing this year?
Jeff Lynch is playing really well. He's been playing with Daryl May and Brandon Campos, and they create a lot of offense. They're 3 of our best offensive players, and you know, Jeff Lynch is a steady influence. He's up and down. He works hard. And he creates opportunities by hard work and playing good systems. And that's what we expect. You know, we're put all our eggs in one basket with Lynchy, May, and Campos. And, you know, they have to be the offensive catalyst for us.
And Brandon Campos, here's a guy you expected to be able to contribute a lot for you guys offensively this season. Injured for pretty much the entire first half of the season. How's he coming along here after the Christmas break?
Well, you know, we've put him up in the top line, and we've put him up to right wing, and, you know, he created a lot of offensive opportunities in Edmonton. We just didn't have finish, and, you know, he's such a dynamic player, and he creates a lot of room for his line mates, and, you know, he's going to be a really good player. He's highly skilled, and he's quick, and, you know, we look for him to generate offense from the right side.
And Coach Daryl May this year, I got to bring him up, only 10 points in 14 games. Not so bad there, but only the 1 goal for Daryl May. This is a point-a-game guy, and he's struggling this season, isn't he?
Well, you know, Daryl last year is the top returning point-getter in, you know, in Canada West. So there's a lot of expectations put on Daryl, and you know, I don't know if struggling is the word for it or not. We are generating a lot of chances. We're just not finishing. And, you know, I guess that's part of being part of the struggling is not finishing. You know, we have to do a better job of getting opportunities and bearing them when we get the chance. Because, you know, when you look at it, each team only has 8 to 12 good opportunities to score. And most teams score on 4 or 5 of them. We've only scored on, you know, 1 of them. So that's the difference.
Well, Coach, sounds like that if you guys can just start bearing your chances, maybe get going late in the season, you could make a little run here, hey?
Well, we have to, and you know, we understand we're in a desperate dogfight, do or die every game, so that's the way we look at it.
Milan Dragicevic, head coach, UBC Thunderbird men's hockey, will be at the Manitoba Bisons this weekend. Big weekend for your team, Coach. Best of luck in Winnipeg.
Thanks, Daryl.
Thanks. Okay, so that was Milan Dragicevic, as you just heard, head coach UBC Thunderbird men's hockey. Last UBC Thunderbird note, the swimming team, which has been so dominant over the years, Canada West Swimming Championships at UVic on the weekend. And that'll round up our UBC sports coverage for the week. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we're back, Julio Caravetta of the BC Lions Radio Network will be with us. We're going to talk where the Lions are at so far in this offseason. Maybe we'll talk a little Super Bowl with Julio while we're at it. And big news in Lions camp happened yesterday. Cam Wake signs a four-year, $4.9 million deal with the Miami Dolphins. 39 sacks and 38 career regular season games with the Lions. He was really pretty cool to watch in his years here at BC. Also later on the show at about 5:30, 5:40, got to figure, BJ Bass, my man from Las Vegas, will be with us. We'll talk a little Super Bowl, get into a little Canuck stuff, a little hockey stuff, and then that'll be the end of the show. I'll throw a little Australian Open talk in there, and then that's it for me. So that's what's coming up in the next hour. All right, we're going to take a break here. You're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio.
Wednesday mornings on CITR from 8 to 10 a.m. It's the Suburban Jungle Show with your radio host, DJ Jack Velvet. Thrills, chills, excitement, and music. That's the Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 on 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You can also catch this show, streaming and podcast, at www.jackvelvet.net. Don't miss the Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesdays 8 to 10, 101.9 FM, CITR.
Hi, I'm Bryant Reeves of the Vancouver Grizzlies, and you're listening to CITR 101.9.
Boys, give it up without a fight. They say, hey, boy. and true's been tried. They'll take it all if the door's left open. Steal the nose right from under your eyes. I'm a carpetbagger, baby. I'm coming to your town. I'm gonna treat you kind. I'm gonna rob you blind. I'll smile all the time. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. With us online, he's home. You chilling? You having a good day?
Yeah, no, it's been, I was so busy there after the football season. It's been rather nice to kind of sit back and relax for a little while. So, it's been a nice little couple months and getting caught up in all the family stuff, but things are good.
Attaboy. Julio Caravatta from the BC Lions Radio Network with us. How's the fog in your neck of the woods, Julio?
Good. No fog today.
No fog.
Yeah, I'm up on top of in central Coquitlam there. So, we seem to have evaded it today. You know, we didn't get any fog today, so it was nice.
Good for you. Yeah, you're at home, you're chilling out, no fog. What else is there in life right now, eh?
Well, pretty soon you're going to hear a couple of kids screaming in the background, so this goes to show you.
I can actually hear them. Julio, let's get into this right now. Big news out of Lions camp. Well, you knew it was coming, but it's just the story's finally landed, and it's a very interesting story, very nice story. It's almost a story with a happy ending here for a BC Lion.
Yeah, you're right. We kind of all knew what was going to happen. We were just wondering where it was going to be and how much it was going to be for, and obviously for Cam Wake, the Miami Dolphins are the, you know, I think the sweepstake winners. You know, from the sounds of it, there was quite a few teams at the end that were all right there. And, obviously the Dolphins stepped up with the money offer. But I think Cam was pretty smart about where he went. It was more about, you know, being in the right fit, being on the right team. So I think it's a great move for them. It's a good defense for him. That 3-4, I think, is where he's really going to be suited for. And obviously, the Dolphins and all the teams did their homework. They knew what they were getting, and they're going to be pleasantly surprised with him. He's a very, very good player, and he's got nothing but an upside. And now he's going to get a tremendous opportunity to go down there and play.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, I think what's also a part of this, Julio, is he is signed by the Miami Dolphins, a very good football team this year. They had a very good defense, but it's the guy who signed him. Bill Parcells is the guy running that show. I mean, this is a guy who's seen a Lawrence Taylor in his prime, coaching him back in the day. And it just says something that Bill Parcells was a guy who saw something in Cam Wake, gives him $1 million in guaranteed money in a four-year contract.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. A guy with his eye for talent and for what he's done in the league, for a guy like that to step up and do what he's done, it just goes to show you what they think. And you know, you've been around football long enough to know, Daryl, that you know, when you get a substantial offer like he did, the money that's there, you're guaranteeing yourself some patience on the Miami Dolphins side of the ball. Like, you know, a lot of times we see guys come up from the Canadian Football League, or they go down there and they get their, you know, maybe a $30,000 signing bonus, and you know, these high expectations, they go down there, it's nothing. But when you're getting $1 million guaranteed and the kind of deal that he got over, you know, 4 years, that's going to get you a good solid look. And that's not just going to be a training camp, that's going to be a, you know, whole seasons or a whole couple of seasons. So they think very highly of him. They like his skill set. They like what they see on film. They like, obviously, what he did when they tested him, and the rest is going to be up to Cam.
Yeah, so, you know, Julio, here's a guy, 39 sacks in 38 games regular season in the CFL. Unbelievable statistics right there. Two-time CFL Defensive Player of the Year. How good was Cam Wake in these 2 years? Did you ever see a defensive player quite like him? No.
I think that, you know, that's one of the things I think that really, you know, when you look back on it now, what he did in his rookie year was tremendous. But to be able to come back in a year later and do even more, I think, like, you always get a sense of the impact that a guy has, not just on what he does statistically, but what he does to another team and how they have to game plan for him. And you talk to any offensive coordinator in the league, when they played the BC Lions, they had to account for Cam Wake and where he was at all times. And they made sure that they had one, if not two guys, sometimes three guys on him, because that's the kind of respect that he commanded. And I think that's when you can see the impact of a player, is when you're getting teams to change the way they play because they're worried about your skill set, then that's saying something. And the one thing that really jumps out at me is, you know, thinking back to the last couple of years, that he was probably, you know, one of the very few guys that defensively you watched him. You know, we so often follow the ball and want to see the ball go downfield. I found myself watching him run or rush the quarterback because I wanted to see what he did next. You know, it was just that's the kind of ability that he had. And it's going to be a long time coming until we see another guy like that, because he was definitely a huge, huge impact player.
So go back to how he landed on BC. Obviously, I mean, he didn't come in with much hype, I remember. An undrafted
guy. Well,
here's
a little bit of a trivia bit for you, Daryl, because I know you like this kind of stuff. Sasha Lancaster.
Okay.
You know who he is?
No.
Well, Sasha Lancaster was a defensive end with the University of Arkansas. He's 6'3", 270. He's now, I believe, on the Hamilton Tiger Cats roster, or, you know, practice roster. And if Sasha Lancaster would have signed a contract 2 years ago with the BC Lions, we would have never have known what Cam Wake was all about.
Really?
Because Lancaster was Bob Obilovich at the time, his director of player personnel, was his first choice. Cam Wake had gone to the wrong practice facility for his workout, and they never had a chance. It wasn't anybody's fault. You know, I mean, he misunderstood where they were supposed to meet, and he ended up going there. I think it was like in Washington D.C. or you know, might have been at Temple University, something like that. And he missed his workout, and Cam, you know, basically had to rely on Bob just saying to them, okay, we're going to bring you to camp. But if it wouldn't have been for Lancaster not signing his contract, it would have been a moot point. They would have never have signed him. They would have gone with Lancaster, and nobody would have heard of Cam Wake. And it's kind of weird how you look back at those kind of things. And because he came in, he got signed about 2 or 3 weeks before training camp. And you're right, nobody knew who he was. He had sat out the entire 2006 season from football. He was on the practice roster with the Giants in 2005, didn't do much, and now 4 years later, you know, it's a storybook ending.
When did you first notice this guy? When did all
first
the buzz
practice.
Start? First practice, eh?
Yeah, first practice. The first time I saw him play or, you know, even do the pass rush drills in the one-on-one, I knew, you know, I saw him get underneath Jason Jimenez and basically push Jimenez onto his back, and that doesn't happen every day. And I think Wally Buono was another guy that was, you know, knew from the very first play that that he had a special player.
Wow, you would have loved to have been in Wally Buono's head for that pass rush, hey?
Yeah, he knew right away. He says from the very first time he saw him, and again, I just think it goes to show you that, you know, how lucky they were. Not only in getting the player, but getting the man, like getting the person. Because Cam Wake, anybody who's been around him knows that he was an outstanding individual. Like, he was a yes sir, no sir kind of guy who, obviously playing at Penn State under Joe Paterno had a huge impact on him. And I think that's another big reason why Miami really liked him, because he comes from a big program, and you know, the kind of guy that comes out of Penn State is. Usually a guy that, you know what you're going to get out of him. He's going to work hard. It's going to be team first. And that's the kind of team that they're building in Miami. And I'm sure that had a big impact on Parcells and Tony Sperano, who is the head coach.
Well, he'll be playing linebacker, and isn't Penn State known as linebacker?
Yeah,
U,
it is,
right?
But he's not a linebacker. I know that everyone says that, though. Yeah, well, he's going to be a weak side. He's not going to be a weak. He's going to be coming after the quarterback. That's what he does. He occasionally, will he drop into pass coverages? Yes. But he is not going to be a drop linebacker in passing situations. If you had Cam Wake and you saw him, what would you say he does best? He gets after the quarterback. He's got great speed. He's got great tenacity. He's got a motor that doesn't stop, and he'll go from sideline to sideline. And we saw what he did on this field. Could you imagine what he's going to do down there on that field? He's you know, so well conditioned. The game is going to slow down so much for him down here because he's so used to the speed of the game and how fast it goes between plays. Down there is going to be like, holy cow, he's going to have all sorts of time to get his breath and reload because there's so much time between plays. So I don't see him being a drop linebacker. I see him like a Joey Porter type where they are going to get him off the edge and they're going to say, just get after the quarterback.
So you think he'll do quite well in the NFL?
I do. I really do. I just, you know, people say, well, you look at Joey Porter and, oh, how can you compare him to, well, Joey Porter's 6'2", he's 255, and Cam's 6'3", 260. He ran a 4.55 40 in his college pro day at Penn State. And, you know, I know this is a long time ago. This is 4 years ago. But at the same time, like, you've seen him run down quarterbacks. You've seen him run down plays from the back. I don't think he's lost a step. I think, in fact, he might have gotten faster. So once you have that, and if you look at the NFL too, the kind of guy that's coming off the edge now is not your prototype anymore, that 6'4", 5", 300-pounder or 290-pounder. It's that 250, 260-pound guy that can use his speed to get around the corner. And that's what Cam Wake does. I heard Rob Murphy today talk about him, say he was one of probably the top three athletes he's ever been around. And that's saying something because Murphy, you know, defended a guy named Dwight Feeney in Indianapolis and also played against Javon Curse. And that's the two guys that he compared him to physically. So if Murphy, who's played a tackle down there, thinks that he can play, then I'm going to side with a guy like Murphy because he's been there.
Awesome. And Julio, Cam Wake statistics, though, back to the CFL, 39 sacks in 38 games. It's very misleading reading a rush end's numbers like that because of the double and the triple teams. He could have had 90 if.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, he could have, you know, I think, you know, towards, especially the second half of the season last year, he was so dominant, they had to double and triple team him. They did. And there's a reason why the Lions led the league in sacks, is because when you have to spend two and three guys on one person, then your other guys better get you sacks. And I know that Aaron Hunt and Brent Johnson were, you know, big recipients of all that pressure that Cam Wake or all that attention that he received. So it's going to be a big hole, a huge hole to fill for the Lions. But, you know, it's something that is part of the process here in the Canadian Football League. You're going to get guys who leave. You're going to get guys who are going to go and try out down there. And it's the job of the head coach and general manager and the player personnel got to go out and find talent. And now, more than ever, Roy Shivers and Wally Bond have got to go out and find another Cam Wake.
Well, that's probably not going to happen, but they'll have
you're right. It won't. But, it forces you all the time to be on the lookout for talent because, you know, I think anybody who saw Cam play last year and especially this year knew that he wasn't going to be around for long. So it's not like it's caught them by surprise. They knew this was happening and they have to be prepared for it.
Yeah, talk about the Lions defense. You're losing Cam Wake. Tyrone Williams is gone. Otis Floyd is gone. Jamal Johnson's going down to Tampa Bay. They've also cut Jason Claremont on the offensive side of the ball, but those are some real big names on defense.
Yeah.
No secondary guys mentioned there, but on the line and on the linebacker core, those are some real names there, Julio. What's this defense going to be like next year?
Well, I think that they're going to be much more active in free agency next year or this year. I've heard through the grapevine that I'm going to guess at least two linebackers. You know, a lot of them said about, you know, the three linebackers in Saskatchewan, but I think the Lions will at least get one of those guys. if not two. And, you know, I think that one of the things that's happened here is really what has made Wally such a good coach and why he's had such a good team over the years is because he's able to identify players that are maybe just reached their prime or are on the way down. And anybody who's been around, you know, Tyrone Williams is a great player, and Otis Floyd is a great player, but they were losing a step. That's the reality. They, you know, they were 37. One of them was 37 years old. Like, they're productive, yeah, but you, at some point, you have to cut ties with those guys and move on. And, you know, this is the year. And then obviously you got a whole bunch of guys that got to fill some holes. But that's part of the evolution. That's part of why you get players like Cam Wake and Tyrone Williams. There were guys there before them. There was a Chris Wilson who played defensive end for the Lions, who spent 2 years here and then went to the Washington Redskins. They had to replace him. And every team has to do it every year. It's just part of the process. And you just got to hope that you can go out and find those guys that can be impact players before anybody else does.
Can Brent Johnson get his game back to A-level?
I believe so. But again, I think that it's a big part of that is going to be who plays the other two positions. You know, when you have one guy on your defensive line, it's not good enough. You have to have four guys that are a threat. And if you can do that, then you're going to be successful. And that's one of the been really the signature of that defense over the last few years is that fact that they are able to get pressure with four and five guys. And that's why they've led the league in sacks, and that's why they lead the league in turnovers every year, because they're able to force the quarterback into bad decisions because of that pressure. So the Lions are, you know, and Brent's not getting any younger either. You know, he's going to be, what, 32 this year? So they have to find some guys, find some speed guys to complement him, because if you just got a Brent Johnson and an Aaron Hunt, it's not going to be good enough.
And offensively, Julio, for the Lions right now, Jason Claremont, he's been cut. Tell us about that loss. Charles Roberts also gone, but you know, you could kind of see that one coming. Yeah,
yeah. I think the more and more I think about the Claremont one, I think it caught everyone off guard because no one saw it coming. But I think that when you look at the overall picture, they just felt, and you know, with Claremont, he's a guy who's played seven seasons going into eight seasons and has probably got the body of a guy who's played 12 or 13. He has taken a lot of abuse and a lot of big shots over the middle, and that's been well documented. But he has, again, lost a bit of speed. And if you want a possession guy over the middle, 10 yards, you know, intermediate stuff, he is the guy you want to throw the ball to. But is he going to stretch a defense from the inside part of your offense? No. If you're going to see Giroy Simon and Jason Claremont line up as your inside two slots, if I'm the free safety and I'm going to cheat anyway, I'm cheating over to Giroy Simon's side because I know where the ball's going, because I know that my linebacker can run with Claremont. So I think that it was a part of a process that they felt at the end of the year they weren't fast enough, especially in the interior, and they need to get bigger and faster. Now, that's everybody's wish list, right? They want a big, strong, fast inside receiver, especially in this league. And that's going to be, again, Paris Jackson will probably move inside there. But, again, they have to find some more speed at receiver. That's the big glaring thing to me is that they need to find a complement to Giroy Simon, somebody who can really stretch that defense and open it up and create space for the rest of them.
Yeah, well, the other one with Claremont, too, Julio, being a Canadian and, you know, watching him grow as a BC Lion was just quite great. But you know he's going to make some big plays for Saskatchewan against BC next year. You know there's going to be some banging hits.
And again, I think people will probably, next year, like, he's probably going to come back and have a good year, and everyone will be like, oh, well, what are the Lions? It's just, again, it's part of the evolution of putting a football team together every single year. And, You have to sometimes make some very, very difficult decisions as a general manager, head coach, on players, especially players like Claremont, who have given so much not only to his team but to his community and have now a huge following in Vancouver. It's tough because people get emotionally attached, and it's always going to be difficult. But at the same time, it's part of the process again, and I know I keep saying that phrase, but it is. It's part of a good general manager's job to make sure that he has a good competitive team. And if he feels that you're slipping, he's got to make a tough decision. And usually the teams that keep holding on to guys that maybe are just past their prime are the team that get left in the dust.
Drew, the last thing with the Lions here is the quarterback situation. Obviously, it's going to be Buck Pearson, Jarius Jackson coming back. That's what it looks like. My question to you is not necessarily, well, first off, who is going to be the starter next year? The other question, though, is what kind of leash is Buck Pearson going to be on? I mean, if Buck or Jarius doesn't deliver this year, you got to figure they got to go out and cut both of these guys and get somebody else for 2010. This has to be their last shot, these guys.
Yeah, well, I will say this, that there won't be a leash. And this is why I say that. At the beginning of last year, I've always been a big believer that two quarterbacks can survive together on a team in not a controversy, but as a pair, if the personalities are right. You have to have two guys that put the team first and put themselves second, and that's clearly the case with Buck and Jarius. But I think that there is also a part of me that says you have to clearly have one guy and say to him, you're my guy, okay? If you get hurt or whatever, you're still going to be my guy. If you go out and you make a bad throw, you're still my guy. Because what ends up happening, Daryl, is this, and Buck has admitted this, and so has Jarius to me at the end of the year. They both said it. You can't go into a season thinking to yourself, if I make a mistake, I'm going to be coming out. Or if I maybe put a bad quarter, there's too much pressure. You can't play the game that way. You have to play relaxed. And that's and what I mean, and also what I mean by that too is you can't now as a quarterback think, oh, I can go out and throw four interceptions, it doesn't matter. Because it's a competitive business. You have to be pushed by someone. You have to think to yourself that, hey, there's a chance that I could. So I'm pushing myself every single day in practice. But you also have to have the comfort in your own mindset that if you do make a mistake, that you're not going to get yanked. And I think that that guy is going to be Buck Pearce. With Jarius, they both make the same amount of money. I don't know what's going to happen with that because I don't see them going into next season paying two guys the same money to be starters. I think that financially, I don't think they can do that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the quarterback situation as we move forward. But I do think that it's going to be Buck Pearce's team to go with.
But do you agree with me, Julio, that if he doesn't get it done this year, they got to go out and get a big name guy?
And Jarius is 30, what, they're going to be 32, 33?
Sure.
So it's not like he's any younger, right? They like Zach Champion. They really do. They think that he's going to be a very good player up here. He's got the mind. He's got the arm. He especially has the brains to play. And they feel that he's a young man who is gonna maybe really impress some people come training camp with a full season under his belt, understanding the system. I mean, he's another guy that came in towards the end of just before training camp, and really kind of surprised a lot of people during training camp. So high hopes with him as well. So there's going to be lots of stuff happening, I think, Daryl, in the next couple of weeks and maybe another month, but Definitely a different BC Lions team than we've seen in probably the last few years.
What are you hearing around the grapevine with Casey Printers? Talk about a guy.
Well,
Wally Buono.
I've heard that his agent Jason Menlock's going to ask Hamilton if they'll just release him and let him out of his contract so he can go negotiate his own deal. I don't think that he wants to go back to training camp there. And I know that there's a few teams that would be very, very interested in him, but at definitely a very much reduced salary. So if you have any thoughts that Casey Printers is going to end up here, put them out of your head because it isn't going to happen. I would imagine that Toronto, Saskatchewan, and Winnipeg would be right there, if
Saskatchewan
becomes available.
Saskatchewan would bring him in?
I think so.
Potentially wrecking some chemistry over there?
Chemistry?
Oh, Saskatchewan doesn't have chemistry, eh?
Well, the Saskatchewan had Michael Bishop and Darian Durant at the end of the year. You know kind of a disaster that was, and Bishop was a complete and utter failure there when he got traded from Toronto. So I think that if Eric Tillman thinks he can get a guy like Casey Printers to come in and under a new system and with the way that they play, I think that there's a few general managers out there that would definitely take a flyer on Casey Printers. He's done enough in this league that, you know, and quarterbacking is such a premium that people will write off the fact that Hamilton was such a poor team, and that's why it reflected on him. that if given another chance with a good supporting cast, that he could be the old Casey Printer. So you'll see some people give him a chance.
It would be fun for BC fans if he signed with Saskatchewan, eh?
Yes, it would.
There you go. Julio Caravana. Julio, thanks as always. And the Oscars, Julio, the nominations come out on Thursday. Any movie stuck out for you that you saw this year?
I haven't seen anything, but I would like to see The Wrestler.
You haven't seen The Wrestler?
No.
You
have
must?
You?
Yeah. Awesome.
Really?
Awesome. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. You got to do
gonna
it.
Get a, is he going to get an Academy Award
he
for that?
He gets Best Actor.
Yep. He does, eh? Good.
Yeah, he
Good.
Gets... And I actually would like to see it get a Best Picture nomination. I just don't think it will. But,
right
well,
that's what happens when you have two young kids. You don't get a chance to go see a movie as much as you'd like to.
I thought maybe, you know, you said you didn't have as much to do, but you find other things to fill your day.
Well,
eh,
I've got to take my kids to soccer right now, so.
All right, go be a soccer dad.
Okay.
Thanks, Julio.
Good to talk to you, Daryl.
You too.
Take care.
Talk
we'll
you
talk
soon.
To you soon.
All right, that was Julio Caravana of the BC Lions Radio Network. Always fun talking to Julio. Okay, folks, we're going to take one last final break here on Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio Vancouver, Canada. When we're back, we're going to go talk to my main man, BJ. Yeah, we'll be right back in a jiffy.
Mr. Tambourine Man! Mr. Tambourine Man!
Hey!
Mr. Tambourine
Man. Hi, this is William Shatner. Imagine a children's hospital network that boldly goes where none have gone before, and that's Shriners Hospitals for Children. Shriners Hospitals combine state-of-the-art research and teaching programs with world-class orthopedic burn, spinal cord injury, and cleft lip and palate medical care. At Shriners, tomorrow's medical care is here today. Call 1-800-361-7256 for more information. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Oh,
Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds.
Welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. BJ?
Yo.
Were you able to pick out that theme song intro and ending? Were you able to be able to figure out what that show is?
Not even close. I'll go with Hill Street Blues.
Hill Street Blues. It is actually The Office, the British version.
Oh, a little Ricky Gervais.
A little Ricky Gervais. You watched the one with, what the hell is it? What's the guy's name? Carell?
Steve Carell?
Steve Carell. I got it. I got it out, everybody. You watched...
Daryl, I don't know if it's Steve Carell or Steve Carell.
would they give me points in Jeopardy? That's my question. Would they give me points in Jeopardy?
You're right. You're right. I don't know. It's a good question. Where's Alex Trebek? He's Canadian.
He is.
Get him on the horn.
With us right now, BJ Bass, Nevada, Las Vegas. Do you watch The American Office? I have to finish that.
Every now and then. Every now and then. It's a pretty good show.
Yeah, it started with that theme song, just so you know.
Yeah, not a big network TV guy. I like swearing. I like nudity. I like violence. Those are the things I want to see in my television programming.
All the good stuff, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Right to it. With us right now, BJ Bass, my guy, Nevada, Las Vegas. And BJ, the Super Bowl matchup has arrived. It is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Not a huge surprise there. A surprise, but I believe at the beginning of the year, they were probably fourth on the board in the AFC behind New England, Indianapolis, San Diego. I'm putting them at about fourth. But the NFC, what the hell's going on? The Arizona Cardinals make the Super Bowl. Kurt Warner is back in the big game. 32-25 winners over Philadelphia on Sunday, a game that broke my heart, BJ. Arizona 6.5-point underdogs. They are in the dance for their first time ever. They haven't won a championship since 1947, but I don't think that counts because in 1947, they were the Chicago Cardinals. And then after that, they moved to St. Louis. Then they became the Phoenix Cardinals, changed that to the Arizona Cardinals, and kaboom, they're in the Super Bowl. So there you have it.
Isn't that kind of like saying, you know, that Vancouver's won a Stanley Cup?
Based on the millionaires, right?
Based on the millionaires, yeah, exactly.
Well, the Vancouver has won a Stanley Cup, but I think it would be different if the Canucks had won a Stanley Cup in, like, you know, Cleveland or something like that, right? So... We trudge on. Anyways.
Hey, listen. Don't give Bettman any ideas, huh?
Well done. Arizona 6.5-point underdogs. Your thoughts, Arizona Cardinals in the Super Bowl, Kurt Warner, Edgerton James, how great is Larry Fitzgerald? And their defense seems like it's just good enough, and here they are.
Who thunk it? I mean, it is the ultimate who thunk it. I mean, listen, even last week we were talking about the beginning of the playoffs, not even the season, but the beginning of the playoffs, the Cardinals were getting like 30 or 50 to 1 to win to win the Super Bowl, you know, yet alone now. I mean, obviously it's amazing. And listen, I mean, Kurt Warner, I mean, this is a guy that's been there before. This is a Super Bowl MVP. You know, I don't know why they just never got any love. You know, I mean, the only game that, you know, I've been betting Arizona pretty heavily throughout the season, throughout the last two seasons, and they've been very good to me. The one game in the playoffs that I really thought they had no chance was against Carolina, obviously. You know, every other game they played, Philly, Atlanta, I mean, why they're just being completely written off with, you know, a former Super Bowl MVP at quarterback and potentially one of the best receivers in the game, yet alone Anquan Boldin also on that same team. You know, it's really bizarre how they just continue to get written off. And listen, the opening line came out, -6.5. It's already gone up to 7. I already have a piece of it. And, again, getting no respect whatsoever. And, you know, we've seen in not only football but in all sports that teams love to rally together, you know, against the world, so to speak. And they're all, you know, they're very often very successful in doing that with that mentality.
Well, BJ, I looked this one up today. The Arizona Cardinals this season, 6-0 versus, can we say, porous, horrendous? What adjective do you want to use to describe the NFC West this year or the last 3 years? 3-7 versus the rest of the league, including 40-point loss at New England, 21-point loss at home versus Minnesota, 28-point loss in Philadelphia, and a game they lost to the Jets by 21 points where they only gave up 56 points. 3-7 versus the rest of the league, and suddenly they catch fire, as they like to say, at the right time, and Arizona finds themselves in the Super Bowl. Pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, and Daryl, you know, obviously I know you're a Philadelphia fan, and my condolences to you as much as I really care. But, you know, we were talking about it, you know, off the air during the week. I mean, it's a ticking time bomb there with Philly. I mean, you know that McNabb or Andy Reid or both are eventually going to screw up. And it's only a matter of time. And you know, Daryl, you know, we keep flip-flopping here of, you know, McNabb gets benched and everybody's gone. Wholesale change in Philly. And all of a sudden they go on this run. They make the playoffs. They win in New York against the defending Super Bowl champions. And all of a sudden it's, you know, all things are fine. I don't really think so. I think they still need changes in Philadelphia. Listen, your team has gotten to 5 division championships in the last 8 years. No. That's a tremendous feat. Tremendous.
Five
amazing.
Five.
However, they've got to one Super Bowl and they lost. At least the Buffalo Bills got to the Super Bowl and then lost it. I mean, don't you figure? I mean, you know, if it's one or two or three, fine. You know, maybe it's, you know, a couple bounces. You just didn't have, you know, that extra in needed. But when it's a track record like this, you know, doesn't it kind of say that our team is good enough to get to the top of the hump but not over it?
BJ, 5 conference championships, you meant to say.
Oh, yes. Did I say divisional? Yes, yeah, of course. 5 NFC championship games, which is incredible. But, you know, I mean, it doesn't indicate something if a team gets there continually and just cannot get it over the hump?
All right, BJ, as a Philadelphia fan, I started liking them when Randall Cunningham, Reggie White, Seth Joyner, Buddy Ryan was the coach at the time. That was the team. Reggie White left in free agency sometime in the early 90s, and that team went to absolute crap for a prolonged period of time. Andy Reid comes in. They draft Donovan McNabb. Philly fans rip him. They all wanted Ricky Williams when he took Donovan McNabb. He's taken this team to 5 conference finals in the last 8 years, BJ. That is a feat. It's a salary cap in the NFL now. I don't really know how you can blow up teams like you used to, because you don't have the same teams rolling in year out. And Philadelphia, this is a team. I mean, you know, at the end of the year, if not for Michael Bush tearing up Oakland, tearing up Tampa Bay for Oakland on the last game of the season, even if they beat Dallas on that last game, Reed or McNabb or both are gone. However, Michael Bush tore up Tampa Bay. Philly beats Dallas. They're in. BJ, they destroyed Dallas in that game. Not only did they beat the New York Giants, a big rival, they also knocked out the Dallas Cowboys this year, throwing a road win in the playoffs in Minnesota. On top of that, the great second half against Arizona, just falling short in the championship game. This has been a very good Philadelphia team. BJ, I disagree with you. I think you got to stick with these guys. Definitely do not fire Andy Reid. And Philadelphia, you know what, B? It's fun being an Eagles fan in a way. It's heartbreaking. They get close. They don't win. It's painful. And, you know, I'm an Eagles fan, but I'm a bigger Dodgers and Canucks fan. I'll say that. And can you imagine being, I mean, Philadelphia Eagles fan, BJ, you got to love them because they're crazy. They're nuts. They are so hardcore into their Eagles. They get so pissed off. They have to be flipping out right now. And I love Eagles fans, BJ, because they're not the cheesy fans from around the NFL. They're absolutely nutto fans. And one day, BJ, Philadelphia will win that Super Bowl, and those fans are going to lose it. I love Eagles fans. BJ, back in the Veterans Stadium, you know the stories. They had a jail in the Veterans Stadium. They were the fans who booed Michael Irvin when he broke his neck and had to be carried off the field. Remember that? They were giving him a standing ovation. They were booing him as he was leaving the field. They were cheering that he was injured. Those are Philadelphia Eagles fans. And in a day, BJ, where it's politically correctness, you go to a Canuck game, it's so cheesy, the promotions they're putting on and everything, it's all let's be good to the kids, da-da-da-da-da. Eagles fans don't want that. They want hard-nosed football. They're going to tell you, screw you if you're doing bad. God bless them. 5 championship games in 8 years. I'm still an Eagles fan. They're fun to root for. And one day they'll win, BJ, and it'll be great. So there you go.
Yeah, Darryl, I got to tell you, man, it's got to be painful to be an Eagles fan. It really does, just to, you know, get so close so often. And, you know, I believe the new stadium, they carried over the tradition of not only the jail, but a courthouse as well, so that they don't have to, like, book guys and move them downtown. They can book them, charge them, hit them right there, right in the stadium. But, you know, Darryl, listen, you know, and you're probably right. I mean, you know, you got to figure that the Eagles probably keep both guys.
Yeah.
You know, you brought it up last week, too. Brian Westbrook is, you know, he's getting old, a ton of carries on that body, a ton of wear and tear. How long does he have left? And once he goes, then you're looking at blowing up the team regardless of Reed or McNabb are still there. So you might as well kind of keep it together as long as Westbrook can continue to be that valuable. And you know what, Darryl? You're probably right. The time will come when the Eagles will win the Super Bowl. But I'll guarantee you one thing. It ain't going to be with Donovan McNabb at the helm or with Andy Reid as head coach.
I think you're leaning the right way with McNabb, although you got to stay with this guy at this point. But Andy Reid, he might bring that Super Bowl to Philadelphia. That one I'll stay with. And I will give myself some props, BJ, as I earned my Eagles stripes, I think, as a fan. And I believe it was just before New Year's Eve 2003. And you've been in Giant Stadium for an Eagles Giants game. I wore my Eagles gear, had my jersey, green toque, green pants all the way in a huge game. The Giants had to win last game of the season to make the playoffs. The Eagles were going for home field advantage, which they got anyways. Eagles lost that game in overtime. And BJ, if it wasn't for the drunken Eagles fans behind me, I might have been in trouble. They were kind of like my guardians in that game, because if anybody was going to fight me, they kind of knew, or they had to know, that they also had to deal with the drunkards behind me. And although they might win the fight in the end, it was going to be a brawl, you know? They better be ready to throw. And you've been in that stadium, and I went in there in Giant season ticket holder land, too. I went in there wearing my Eagles gear. So I think, you know, that's the day I earned my stripes.
I don't know how you survived, to be honest with you. The stuff that I saw, I mean, I saw guys literally walking through an aisle looking at a guy wearing an Eagles jersey, doing a double take, and then punching him in the head. Just randomly, well, like, you know, going to grab a beer or something. So I don't know how you survived. And Darryl, you talk about, you know, the team that you loved, that old Eagle team with Cunningham and Reggie White. That was when God told Reggie White to go to Green Bay, right?
And the Eagles never won, and Reggie got a Super Bowl in Green Bay.
And if I remember correctly, God first told him to go to Cleveland, and they had the deal almost done. And then God told him, wait, there's more money in Green Bay.
Don't sign that deal, Reggie. God's found you more money in Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. God just got you a raise.
And that's why Reggie White became a reverend in the end. Eh? In the end, yeah. But you know, I don't know if those drunkards might have protected me, but I did do that. I wore my. But I'll say this, BJ. I wasn't the most boisterous Eagles fan in that game.
I can imagine.
And if the Eagles had won that game, I honestly think I would have been in trouble. But the Giants won it overtime. And believe me, BJ, we took the bus into the game from Manhattan. Nobody gave me directions to find that bus after the game. We missed the first bus. We had to wait for the bus to come all the way back. Yeah, I remember that one. The other team, though, BJ, in the Super Bowl, the Pittsburgh Steelers. How about this team? What a defense. Troy Polamalu put the game away, 23-14 wins over my main man, Joe Flacco, and the Baltimore Ravens. Hines Ward got hurt in the game. I'll figure he's back in the Super Bowl, BJ. Roethlisberger back in the big game, but what a defense. And you could just see the way they were absolutely punishing Baltimore in this game. This is an incredible Pittsburgh defense, and the difference is Philadelphia, very good defense, but that secondary for Pittsburgh might be the thing that wins them this game, because Larry Fitzgerald, he's not getting off of that ball cleanly like he's been doing so far in these playoffs. Pittsburgh's defense is that good.
Yeah, and obviously that's what I think the game comes down to, is the two things, and I think it's mostly dictated by Pittsburgh. One, as you mentioned, being the secondary and being able to shut down, obviously, not just Larry Fitzgerald, but Anquan Boldin, Steve Breston. These guys have the ability of, three receivers that caught over 1,000 yards, and the ability to move the ball downfield and just get giant chunks of yardage, and moving very efficiently. And I think the other becomes the Pittsburgh offensive line, a group that has, been much criticized throughout the season. In the preseason, they lose Alan Fenica to the Jets. And they really look like they're obviously playing much better now than they have at any point during the season. But, can they keep that up? Can they keep the pressure off of Roethlisberger? Obviously, Arizona is going to bring the blitz and really make Ben beat them. And listen, their secondary is not too bad either. So, I think those are the two really kind of deciding factors of what dictates the game. And, Daryl, the other thing too, every time in past history where you have the great offensive team going up against the great defensive team, the defensive team has always won. There's very few times, where the offensive team has kind of got the better of it, you got to consider that coming into play in this, but, I'm leaning towards Arizona, I got to tell you. Daryl, the other thing about Pittsburgh too, and, I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit here. I want you to go back to the tapes when we did the preview show, because I'm going to guarantee you that I called the Pittsburgh Steelers out of the AFC, and I said the only way that they won't make it is if their schedule just gets way too tough. And we talked about how their schedule was so tough, and they got through it. I mean, this is a great football team. And in Mike Tomlin, the coach of the Steelers, this is a guy that is going to be the coach in Pittsburgh 15, 20, 25 years from now. I mean, these guys just do not move coaches, and they look like they really found a gem there. And when you look at, all the coaching changes that have taken place, certainly this offseason, you're seeing a kind of rush to the youth movement and getting these young guys and these young coaches. And I got to say that Mike Tomlin is responsible for that.
Yeah, I back to my Eagles, BJ. I'm still a little. This was a rough one, It was over.
It's got to be so painful to be an Eagles fan. At least it's a Canucks fan. So sometimes we just don't make the playoffs. You're like, fine, the season's done. And even when they do make the playoffs, you're like, all right, fine. What are we going to do? Get past one round, two rounds? I mean, I couldn't even imagine if the Canucks got like 5 Western championships, within the last 8 years and was only able to get to 1 Stanley Cup. I mean, like, that's got to be difficult. Listen, kudos to sticking with it, my man.
Well, of course you do. Of course you do.
Yeah, of course you do, right?
The quarterbacks in this game, though, BJ, one of these guys is going to come out of this a 2-time Super Bowl champion. His name will either be Ben Roethlisberger or Kurt Warner. To put that into perspective, that will put them one less than Tom Brady, who everybody raves at for having the 3 Super Bowls. One of these guys, Big Ben or Kurt Warner.
Doesn't Warner have 2 already?
No, Warner got 1 with the Rams, and then they lost to the Patriots.
To the Patriots, yes, of course.
Now, the winner of this game will have the same as John Elway, and he will have 1 more than Dan Marino and Peyton Manning combined. So that's the class. Ben Roethlisberger or Kurt Warner for Super Bowl wins will be put in after this game.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing that I think Kurt Warner did by making it back to the Super Bowl, you know, I think that this guy cemented his spot in the Hall of Fame. As scary and as disgusting as it is to say, I'm not a big fan of his or his wife's. But, I mean, don't you think? I mean, you look at a guy that you know, came off the checkout counter at Safeway and then led the Rams to two Super Bowls, wins the Super Bowl MVP in one, you know, goes to New York, helps tutor Eli Manning, comes to Arizona, takes the Cardinals to their first Super Bowl in the history of the Arizona Cardinals. You look at all of his numbers, his stats, his, you know, his completion percentage, his quarterback rating. I mean, these numbers are up there with the greats of the greats. I think Kurt Warner just found a spot in Canton.
I mean, to put Kurt Warner in perspective, what he's done this year, BJ, I'll just go to our fantasy football draft. We have 19 rounds, and there's 12 teams. Kurt Warner does not get drafted. I took Brody Croyle this year over Kurt Warner. Tavarius Jackson got picked. JT Sullivan gets drafted. Not one of us. And that just tells you what Kurt Warner's done this year. Not one of us. Out of 12 teams, 19 picks each, not one of us said the name Kurt Warner. That's how big of a surprise he was this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, he wasn't even the starter at the season. You know, Matt Leinart was the starting quarterback, and everyone thought, you know, finally this is the year he comes back, you know, from the collarbone injury last season and is able to you know, move the team and become the quarterback of that team. And now it's Warner, who's also, by the way, an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, we'll find Arizona.
Payday.
Who? Green Bay?
Payday.
Okay.
Can you say cha-ching? I can hear the Brinks truck rolling up to his house now.
I just think it's great, Beej. You mentioned it. We're not seeing his wife in this playoff run, hey? You got to like that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. They showed her real quick at the end of the game because he went over to hug her, and, you know, she has her hair grown out now. Remember, she had that, like, short, spiky, like, tomboy kind of haircut before?
I despise
her. But you know what? The moment that either one of them open up their mouth, it's just like, oh, my God. Okay, buddy.
I remember why I hate this guy, right? I mean, that's kind
It, like, all of a sudden, like, Jesus was playing left tackle for the Cardinals.
Oh, he's back? He's back again? Oh, boy. BJ, we'll get into Super Bowl predictions next week, okay? We're going to save that for next week. We're going to save that for next week and big Super Bowl preview. You have a new president today.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, like, this is some pretty major news.
Yeah, it's on
Obama,
the
Inauguration Day.
It's on the TV. My mom had her friend TiVo it or PVR it, whatever. And, yeah, my question for you, my Obama question for you, okay?
Yes.
All right, he's got 4 years here as a president, maybe eight.
Yes,
we never know.
Yes, he can. Yes, he can.
Change! Change! All right. George Bush is a president, obviously very unpopular, not a great presidency. However, for baseball, he did help them rid steroids out of baseball, okay? All right? I'm talking from a professional sporting standpoint, or from a sporting standpoint.
I would kind of tend to disagree with that a little bit, but okay, I'm with you. He was the sitting president when all of this came to light. I mean, I think it's the guy that wrote the report that you know, took steroids out of baseball. I'm with you.
Bush brought it up in a presidential address, how he wanted steroids out of baseball. My question for you, though, with Obama, what do you hope he does in professional sports? And I'm aiming, you're thinking you want him to change that college football play.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I think he's almost committed to it because, you know, that was almost like a campaign promise to sports fans when he came on Monday Night Football at halftime. And they asked him, what would you do? And that was his response. I think he's kind of got to stick to it. You know, I think that, you know, listen, there's so many bigger issues.
No, BJ, we're not getting into the bigger issues here.
What do you want me to say? College football playoff? I mean, it's boring, isn't it?
All right, you got another one you want him to throw in then?
I don't know. Fire Gary Bettman. Impale David Stern. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, wake Bud Selig up from the coma the guy's been in the last 15 years. You know, listen, to be honest with you, actually, you know, I got something for you.
All right, lay it on.
I think that what the New York Yankees have done in this offseason, especially with the current economic climate in this country, is absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. You have unemployment rate up. You have people who are overqualified for jobs that they can't get, who you have, you know, a guy with an MBA who's working at Subway. You know, you have people who can't afford gas. You have people who can't afford health care. You know, the Medicare system's a joke. And well, all of this is going place. These guys give $600 million to three players. I think it's disgusting. And to be honest, I think that there is the potential, you know, depending on what happens with the economy, that, you know, this could really hit Major League of Baseball in a big, big way, because, you know, you can't just keep spending. You can't do that. If there's anything we've learned about the recession that we're now in, it was all, you know, based upon people going out and spending and buying things they couldn't afford and you know, ludicrous price tags and credit this and credit that, and I'm going to buy four houses at no interest down. And isn't that what the Yankees are doing?
The problem is the Yankees actually bring that money in. They do. And they gave out $484 million in contracts, and they actually dropped their payroll from the guys they had off the books. That's how much money, and that's how disgusting it is, what the New York Yankees bring in through local television.
You're right. It's the YES Network that allows them to do that. And how is that fair that these guys are the only team that can go out and spend like that? I mean, it's not even a free agent market anymore. It's, okay, well, Yankees, who do you want? All right, because the rest of us will just line up for these other guys.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
I'd like to see Obama change that.
Okay,
because we know that Bud Selig ain't going to do it. And it's even better because Bud Selig owns the Milwaukee Brewers. Like, he's a small market owner, and he still doesn't care.
So that's your Obama request in the sporting landscape for the next 4 years.
I think that is certainly much more pressing, you know, than a college football system. But I'll tell you what, Daryl, you know what I'd prefer to see rather than I'd see Obama fix it? I'd like to see Major League Baseball completely collapse because of it.
Oh, damn you and your baseball.
I know. You're like a diehard. And, you know, I have never been a baseball fan since Alex Rodriguez left Seattle, the whole payroll thing. And, you know, all we've seen is the exact same kind of thinking, progress. And, you know, you got to love the fact that a small market team, you know, or at least a kind of small market team wins the World Series, right? Two small market teams get there, you know.
Who won it this year again? I can't.
Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, they're real small.
Well, listen, I mean, they're small in terms of what they have the ability to spend. You know, obviously they're in a larger market, but, I mean, you know, these guys can't come close to spending what the Yankees do.
Well, what Tampa Bay did, being in a division with Boston, with Toronto, with the Yankees, and even Baltimore's got a decent payroll, beating all those teams in the regular season and then beating the Red Sox in the playoffs, that was one of the great accomplishments we've seen in sports in the last 10 years, believe me.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So that would be my plea for change. you know what else I'd like too, Daryl, while we're on the topic?
Yeah.
I'd like to win our fantasy football pool. I mean, it's been 9 years running, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I'm still milking year one victory, so that's my big thing. The Canucks, BJ, we got about 2 minutes here. The Canucks won 4-1 since the signing of Matt Sundin. 0-4-1 on a homestand. They got a shootout loss in 5 games. People getting a little testy in this town. They're playing San Jose tonight. San Jose 33-6-5 on the season. They're 21-1-2 at home on the year. And if the Canucks lose tonight, it will not be surprising at all if they will go into the All-Star break in 10th place in the Western Conference. At best, it looks like they're most likely to at least be out of a playoff position. And they're playing a team that's 21-1-2 at home this year. They've gone to bad right now. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and, you know, obviously Luongo finally back and obviously rusty. And, you know, ideally by the end of the All-Star break, we get the old Roberto Luongo back. But, you know, the biggest thing about Sundin and, you know, having not watched, you know, I probably watched two or three of those past games since he's been on the team. But the one that spoke to me the loudest was the very first one and the very first shift he took. And I got to be honest with you, I think that he was lying about the kind of conditioning and the kind of working that he was doing while he wasn't playing and while he was, you know, well, I don't know, waiting for whatever the hell he was waiting for. I mean, that first shift, I mean, this guy looked like he hadn't been on the ice in 2 years. And I don't, you know, and listen, I understand, all right, fine, you're playing pickup hockey, and pickup hockey is totally different than the NHL. I totally understand that. But as timid, as scared, as nervous, as, you know, as tight as he came out playing, I think that he was greatly over-exaggerating the amount of on-ice workout and in-game workouts he was actually doing.
Will Obama get on the bottom? Oh, I guess it's a Canadian team. He doesn't need to get on this, does he? With a Swede. He doesn't need to get on this, does he?
No, no. No, we have other things at hand, larger at hand.
You going to an inauguration party tonight or no?
No, you know, I'm not actually. I've been busy working, going to have to work today. But there is some fun stuff going on. There's a lot of, like, you know, I know, like, the Hard Rock Hotel is building it as the greatest day ever. And it's like, you know, everything's $1 from the bar. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, some fun promotions, a lot of really cheap drinks and, you know, a lot of kind of giveaways. You know, I think that it's a great reflection of a change in thinking for, you know, the American people in a large part, and hopefully something that can continue. I mean, people actually, you know, say hi to each other when they walk down the street. It's crazy, Daryl. You know, just like the little subtle differences of living in this country, you know, over the last 6 months, you know, I think if we can continue, it makes, you know, sets a great tone for where we can be.
There you go, BJ. Thanks a lot.
Now I sound like a Yankee.
Yeah. I'm just cutting you off after that one. Thanks, B.
All right, bye.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to New Year's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Mike with Fletcher Head is coming up right now. And what I hope Obama accomplishes, because, you know, we're not talking politics here, and obviously that's the important stuff. BJ wishes to attack the New York Yankees and for a college football system. He mentioned get Gary Bettman out of hockey. That will be my Obama wish.
In
the next 4 years. Do you have an Obama wish? This is like a Santa list here. Do you have an Obama sports request? Or you could have a music request, something from the music scene?
Not off the top of my head.
Not off the top of your head.
No.
Geez. Well, you got a whole show here to think of it.
I'll think of something.
You can think of something. Anyways, folks, thanks for listening. So I'm closing with this today, Mike. Do you ever watch that show, The Office version UK?
I don't watch that version.
Oh, you know, I've rented the DVD. Interestingly, I watched season one. They call it series one.
Well, there's a second series.
But not season. They call it series one.
Well, because they never have seasons. You only do like 10 episodes in the UK.
So, anyways, that's it for me. Thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody. Mike with Flex Your Head coming up in a little bit.
Bye.